paralysis by analysis. That's what you get from the other guys. But not here. Not now. Not ever. This is the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, a deep look inside the game. The Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA is broadcasting live from McFadden's at the ballpark and is brought to you in part by SEPTA, BCWSA, Rob's Automotive, Vince Siriani and GMH Mortgage, Marriott Suites in Clearwater Beach, Harris Comfort, Penn Community Bank, McCaffrey Supermarkets, Peruzzi Auto Group, Keenan's in North Wildwood, and the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. We now go live to McFadden's at the ballpark for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Ricky Batalico and John Brazier.
All right, welcome to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Finally. How about that, Ricky Bo? You got top billing right there.
I did, finally.
And it took you how many years?
It took me, 8 years now?
I think we're longer than that. Chris Ehrmer,
since 2008,
maybe our
right?
9th, 10th year?
Oh, almost 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, so how about that?
Congratulations.
Congratulations to you because you got top billing, Ricky Batalico.
It took 10 years.
All right, well, you're there. So I am John Brazier, Director of Fun and Games with Phils, and of course, this is my co-host, Ricky Batalico. And Ricky, we got some new things this year, right? We are. Look at this camera right
here.
We have a camera.
I got my makeup on. You don't.
I don't. I didn't put makeup on today, but you look good.
Although
in makeup.
You're blocking your face enough. John has a beard.
And a tan. Yeah.
This guy, looking Mr. Like, Clearwater.
Looking like Ernest Hemingway or the most interesting man in the world.
Ernest Hemingway was a little overweight.
Captain of the Titanic was probably a little too white of a beard.
Yeah, right? A little bit too white, but it looks good. Looks good on you.
Bob Weir. Do you know who Bob Weir is?
Bob Weir. I do.
Grateful
How
Dead?
Do I know? Yes.
You don't want to be compared to Bob Weir.
Now we got
Weir.
A stoner.
No, we don't want to be compared there. All right. Rick, so right now we actually are on Facebook Live. So if you want to follow the show on Facebook Live, you can go on facebook.com/WBCB1490 or just go on WBCB1490.com. You can find it. So we are live streaming right now, which would be fun. And you might want to watch it today because we have probably the women would say it's the best looking coach in basketball.
And maybe one of the biggest guests. Well, we've had some big guests, but one of the biggest.
Bernie Perrant, we've had some big guys.
Bernie.
But we got Jay Wright coming on the show.
Yep.
How about that?
That's awesome.
So can't wait to talk to Jay. Do you know he scored 67 points in a basketball game against Malvern Prep?
I got to tell you, that's pretty impressive.
Ben Davis' school, Malvern Prep, he scored 67 points.
You had to throw that in.
I had to throw that in there.
Just to bury Ben.
All right, Rick, we got a great show today. We're going to talk about, obviously, the home opener.
Yep.
We're going to talk about storylines going on around baseball. I want to talk to you about something sticking to Yadier Molina's chest protector. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't, but you're going
to
tell me.
Someone threw a pitch, and literally the ball stuck to the chest protector.
Oh, I did see that. Was that Molina?
Molina, yes. So we're going to talk about that. Talk about Ryan Howard signing a minor league deal with the Braves. Talk about Madison Bumgarner, who had 2 home runs opening day.
Pretty impressive. I mean, off of Greinke, too.
Right. I mean, it's some crazy stuff. So we're going to have, as I said, several guests. We're going to have beat writer extraordinaire from the Bucks County Courier-Times, Kevin Cooney, who we have on a lot. And as I mentioned, we're going to have the coach of the 2016 national champion Villanova basketball team, one of the nicest guys in sports. Love the guy, Jay Wright. But first, Rick,
yeah,
we got a lot. And we're going to preview today's game. I'll give you the lineups. And we'll talk about Strasburg, what you think about the Phils, fighting Phils facing Strasburg, and some of the ridiculous numbers that Jason Worth is putting up. You know, that we
against the Phillies.
Against the Phillies at Citizens Bank Park. I mean, obviously Harper has put up some great numbers, but man, I don't know.
What is he, number 7 now all time at Citizens Bank Park for home runs?
Who's that, Jason Worth?
Yeah.
I think he's up there somewhere. He's number one for non-Phillies since 2012.
That's unbelievable.
So, yeah, number 2 is Harper. So, you know, the Nats have our number. And I think they've won, before last night, they had won 12 of the last 13 contests. So
yeah, well, the Phillies put an end to that quickly.
Well, let's get through that, Rick, because that was a historic game. I mean, did you see this coming at all?
No. You know, to me, the most – well, I mean, did you see anything coming from the night before? I think you felt a little positive because they were down 7-0. Next thing you know, it's 7-6. So they did battle. They did scratch together runs. I mean, Galvis's home run. I think the Nationals made some mistakes in that opener game, especially taking out Scherzer with 2 outs in the 7th. I didn't get it.
Right.
I mean, the guy's a bull. He was obviously mad when he got pulled. And then
their
relief – I know I'm going out on a limb here, but you know as well as I do, the Washington Nationals probably should have won a World Series within the last 5 years.
They should have.
It's been all because of bullpen. And when I saw their bullpen here opening day, I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, they didn't know their closer until 3 days until 3 days before camp.
Well, what is Dusty Baker thinking? 4 days in a row, or 4 games in a row going to training?
Right.
That's ridiculous. Opening a season, you're asking for yourself not to have a closer by midseason.
But I think on that opening day, and again, it was a home opener. We were losing 7-0.
7-0. Yeah.
And teams could have just backed down and said, you know what, let's live on for another day. But I love the fact, even though we didn't quite come back, but we showed some moxie, came back 7-6, had the game-winning run at the plate.
Right.
And even though, again, we didn't do it, that carried into the...
You didn't do it, but it was huge for yesterday.
Right. I agree.
They scored, I believe it was 6-13, 19 unanswered runs.
Yep. All right, let's go through last night. We'll talk a little bit about the home opener, but last night. So the Phils scored more runs in the first inning last night than the Royals, Mariners, Braves, and Pirates have scored all season.
That's pathetic.
How about that one?
That's pathetic.
Yeah.
Really is.
All right, how about this one? Jeremy Guthrie. It was his birthday, right?
Yep.
What a horrible
Happy 38th birthday.
What a
birthday,
horrible
pal.
Birthday present. He did not pitch in the majors last year. He was on a minor league contract. He was brought up. They've had some injuries. Here's his line. He went 2/3 inning pitch, 6, 10 earned runs, 4 walks, 0 Ks, with an ERA of 135.
Which was slightly worse than his last worst outing, which was in 2015. He went 1 inning and gave up 11 earned runs.
Yeah, right. He became first pitch in the live ball era to have 2 games allowing 10-plus runs.
The
You're
only,
right.
11 the only earned time runs I've ever seen anything like this was I was actually playing with the Cardinals.
Right.
And we went into L.A., and Chan Ho Park was pitching, and I'm going to forget his name, third baseman, Fernando Tatis.
Okay, yep.
Hit 2 grand slams in the same inning.
Right.
In the same inning.
I remember
and
that.
And that was all against Chan Ho Park.
Now, Guthrie, as I said, became the fourth pitcher in the last 100 years to give up 10-plus runs without getting 3 outs in the first inning. Jason Jennings in 2007, Luke Hudson in 2006, Bubba Harris in 1948.
And Jason Jennings, I'm betting that was in Colorado, would be my guess.
Probably, yeah, because he was
that seems a little bit more legit. Colorado's a big ballpark. It plays, you know, it's long in the gaps. You're going to get some hits there. You could bleed some in, and then the home runs, as we know, go out like crazy there. Here, the Phillies didn't hit a home run in that first inning.
Right, I know. They got all this. Someone texted me and said, who hit the home runs? And I said, there wasn't any home runs.
Do you realize with 2 outs in that inning with 12 runs in, do you realize that they were 9-for-9?
No.
9-for-9, 4 walks, 2 sacrifice flies.
That's great. How about this one, too?
Are you kidding me?
Guthrie became the first pitcher to give up 10 earned runs on his birthday since Sloppy Thurston in 1925.
Any relation to Thurston Howell III?
I don't think so. Sloppy Thurston, he got his name because his father owned a restaurant and they would give out soup to the less fortunate. Somehow that translates to sloppy.
Sloppy?
I have no idea. Maybe it was sloppy soup. But how about that? Jeremy Guthrie. All right. So.
I guess you slopped the soup.
You slopped the soup. All right. So the Phils' 12-run first inning set a franchise record for most runs ever in the first inning of a game. Previously it was 10, and they did that 4 times. Last time they did that, it was on July in 2009.
They just missed their all-time record.
Right. It was also tied for the second most runs ever scored in an inning by the club, 13 runs at Cincinnati.
2003.
Right. And today was the first time any team in Major League Baseball recorded a 12-run first inning since 2011. It was the Yankees. So some of the highlights. Michael Saunders had RBI double and RBI single. Tommy Joseph, 2 RBIs, a single. They became the first Phillies teammates to have multiple RBI hits in an inning since Mike Schmidt and Sarge. How about that?
I just find it baffling that you pulled off 9 runs with 2 outs.
It's unbelievable, right. And two of the runs were on sacrifices.
Sacrifice
right?
flies and Kendrick a triple into the gap. I mean, it was one of those innings that if you could bottle, it's beautiful, but you can't. That probably will not happen again this year.
Do you know how many pitches they saw in the first inning?
I bet you it wasn't that many. Am I right or wrong? Because I know
it's pretty high, but you'd expect high for 12 runs.
Because I know I think it was 3 runs, and there was 2 runs, and there was only like 12 pitches thrown.
Put it this way: no major league team has seen as many pitches in an inning since August of 14.
Wow, it's got to be in the 70s.
68.
Oh,
yeah, crazy. Minnesota saw 72 in the 14. Philadelphia 17 runs tonight with the most since July 6, 2009, versus Cincinnati when they had 22 runs. It was tied for the third most runs the Phillies have ever scored in Citizens Bank Park. They had 22 on the ninth, as, or in 2009. They had 20 in 2008. They had 17 in 2004.
You know what I thought was the best part about this game is that they did score the 12 runs in the first inning, but usually a team shuts it down. They went on to score in four different innings after that. So that's
except for when they faced Joe Blanton.
Joe, who
will probably be pitching in 15 years.
By the way, I praise him because he came. He looks great, by the way.
He does.
He lost a ton of weight.
He looked great here last year.
Yeah, he looks outstanding. Did a great job last night. Three innings pitched, no runs. He's the only one on that in that bullpen that didn't give up a run yesterday. So, I mean, you got to give him credit because without him, this game, that game still might be being played.
Right, and he pitched, what, three innings? And I think he only he pitched three innings.
No hits.
Right, his line's three innings, zero hits. He had a clean inning except for and three strikeouts.
Look at the pitches, 35 pitches.
And 35 pitches.
That's a heck of an outing by him, especially in a game like that, because your concentration level, you saw it in their hitters. In this when Nola for a second inning,
right.
Jason Worth swung at a pitch that was 3 feet outside.
Right.
I mean, it's one of those things. And it's funny because people will say, well, they need to get hits. They get to pad their stats. I look up and down their lineup, and all of them have multi-year deals. They don't have to pad their stats.
Right. And I guess it's got to relax. Like if you're on the Phillies, you're relaxed because you're not. There's not the tenseness where you know you got to get that big hit.
Right.
You're up by 12 runs. So conversely on their Nationals, they're like, you know what, this game's over.
I know Yogi Berra. It ain't over till it's over. I get it, but that game was over.
Oh well,
12 runs in the first.
If we had blown that one, it could be a long season.
Oh, this place might have been on fire.
Five games into the season, the Phillies have had two games at least seven extra base hits.
Yep.
How about that? They had eight last night.
Excellent.
They had in last year. They had three games the entire season where they did that. They've also gone seven games without committing an error, which is good, right?
Yep. Don't jinx them.
I know I'm not. I'm trying to think one more. How about this? Nats rotation had allowed six runs all season before that inning. They had allowed six runs all season before that inning.
What do you expect from Guthrie?
Their ERA went from 2.10 to 5.47. I'm sure he's probably on his way down to wherever their AAA team is.
Why would you send him down?
To send him out? Yeah, he sent him out.
I
feel bad. I mean, the guy,
out.
Poor guy.
38th person. Why do you feel bad? He's had a lot of good years at the big league level.
He has, yeah.
Sometimes you're trying to push it a little too much, and this is what happens.
Right.
38 years old, John.
Right. Yeah. They sent 16 men to the plate, right?
Yep.
Nine hits, four extra base hits. They walked four times. First two outs of the inning, both scored on sacrifice flies.
They batted 900 in the inning. They were 9 for 10.
Kendrick Saunders and Joseph Allred had two hits in the inning. And it's funny, Joseph, here he went into the – he went 13. He was 0 for 13. And then he came in and got – and then Kendrick had a three-run triple.
What's his whip?
Okay. What's Guthrie's whip?
Yeah.
What is his whip?
It's got to be 10.
That's a great question. No idea.
How bad his stats look. Average against 1,000.
I mean, I would love to see how many times the Eagles scored 17 points last year. Was there, how many games do they have under 17
points?
Oh, that's
not even right. I don't know.
No, but I'm just saying, like, when you say 17, it was funny because when you say Francie says, all right, all they need is two touchdowns and they can, and an extra point, two-point conversion.
It was, I mean, that was one of those games where you just sit there and say, this could not have gone better for Aaron Nola because he
Let's talk about that now that you're on Nola. So, okay, go ahead.
He goes out there in the first inning, and I thought he did not look well in the first inning. He was trying to change his arm angle. He was trying to come over the top, obviously. You don't want to – look, with his arm angle, it's going to put stress on his elbow constantly.
Right.
There's no way around it. So you keep your shoulder as strong as possible, and that'll help things in the long run. Now, yesterday we see him come out in the first inning, and I did not have command. He got helped out because Trey Turner blew out a hammy going to third base.
Who's okay.
And then Ryan Zimmerman is the best guy in the league to hit into a double play. And, I mean, slow because Franco fields the ball, has to run 20 feet to the bag, then still throws him out off balance over to first base. Aaron came out in the second inning, and I think he just – the world –
Right,
was,
relax.
The weight of the world was off his shoulders.
That might have been the greatest thing for him. And to think about how close that was. Yeah, bases loaded, no outs.
Right.
Right? And you're exactly right, how it played out. Franco, that's probably not the right play, right? The play
probably would have gone to home.
And then maybe tried to go to home.
I think it would probably have been an easier double play.
Right.
It's a bang bang that right. way. And this Alicia, way he's and Alicia, running. Anything could happen.
But I guess maybe he had in his head that Ryan Zimmerman is slow and he can get to third.
Yeah, but,
even then it was
like
an awkward throw.
He was 15 feet away from the bag. That's a long way to stop your momentum, run to the bag, tag, and throw.
You're right.
Especially off balance.
Right. He's throwing on his back heel.
Yeah. So I just thought after that first inning, I really believe that the Nationals kind of – And I hate to say it, they shut it down.
Right.
They shut it down. They just wanted – I'm surprised Dusty didn't take out half his team by the fifth inning.
All right. Coming up on the show, we are going to get Kevin Cooney's take on the game on opening day, on opening week, we should say. We'll come up with that. You are listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB. We're live from McFadden's.
We now return to McFadden's at the ballpark for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Ricky Batalico and John Brazier.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's. I'm John Brazier, joined by Ricky Batalico, and we have our local.
He'll be our lead reporter.
Our lead reporter, Kevin Cooney from the Buck County Courier.
I have to be lead something.
How you doing, Kev?
Oh, there you go. You got it.
I got it. I'm good, guys. How are you?
Good. Now, we were talking about, obviously, last night's game. Obviously, last night's wild offensive. Now, you were in the clubhouse afterwards. Were you in both clubhouses?
No, I was just in the Phillies. You rely on the Nationals writers to help you out for the Washington perspective. But
all right, let's get both. So let's get your live perspective when you went into the clubhouse after talking to some of the guys, including Nola and some of the offensive stars, and then what you heard from Washington on the other side.
Well, this is the best laid plans kind of scenario. Before the game, I'm talking to Tommy Joseph about his 0-for-13 and thinking, sidebar, little notes story and everything. And
yeah.
Then he gets two hits in the first inning. Yeah. So I'm thinking, that story's ripped up. But they're a lot looser. I thought they were really loose after that game. It was funny because Blanco had put two baseballs in Joseph's locker with the date on it as if it was his first hit as a major.
That.
So
right.
It was pretty cool. They're pretty loose. Nola, I thought – Ricky was right. I think that first inning really just played into getting Nola confidence, and the Nationals kind of checked out after that point too. Those at-bats were a little lacking.
Now, do you believe what I think is that, look, you look up and down the Nationals lineup, all those guys are multi-year players. They all have made their contracts, more or less.
Except Turner, who was out of the game.
Okay, except for Turner, who was already gone. You know what? We're down 12-0. We're probably not coming back in this one.
What's the old old cliche is you're going to have 60 of those. You're going to have 60 blowouts of your, that you'll win. And then the difference in baseball is what you do with the other 42 games.
Well, Yogi Berra was full of garbage when he said it ain't over till it's over, because that one was over very
That was over early. And then they just kind of kicked the body around for about 3 hours afterwards. It was
– But the clubhouse was loose afterwards.
Clubhouse was loose. And, look, you want to talk about going from 0 to 60, though. You're going from Jeremy Guthrie to Steven Strasburg.
Right.
I mean, it is – a big fear. If you're a Philly, you've seen this act before of you put up all these runs and at a certain point you go, save some for tomorrow.
Right.
Because you're facing a guy who has your number in this ballpark.
Well, I tell you, you look at that lineup for the Nationals. Well, first of all, you got Strasburg and Scherzer on top of that, plus Tanner Roark. And as you said, the bullpen's their Achilles heel. But you look at that lineup, man, it's you got Worth, and you got Zimmerman if he's healthy, and you got Trey Turner if he's healthy.
But one thing that, it's funny because I think the Mets are more dangerous than the Nationals.
Right now, seeing their bullpen.
Yeah.
You know what? What is wrong?
Overall, but I'm saying mentally, that Nationals, Daniel Murray.
They can hit,
but the problem is you have Zimmerman who has an injury history. Worth has had injuries the last couple of years. Harper, for as great as he plays here, can go in the – where he just disappears for a while.
Right.
Do you believe he's a $400 million player?
No.
I don't either.
No. Look, is he a great player? Would you want him here? Absolutely. But there's a limit. There's a price tag. He's not Trout.
No.
I think that's what everybody has to realize.
And forget what our needs are. Would you rather have Harper or Machado?
Machado.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have Machado as well.
I'd rather have Machado and – then the dilemma becomes, what do you do with Mikel Franco? Do you put him at first, or do you use him as a trade chip?
Or Machado wants to go back and play shortstop. And I know you got Galvison, you've got some big trade chips.
I was just going to say, you also have Crawford. You have trade chips here that you can use for whenever you decide that it's time to go get somebody.
But what I was getting after, you look at the Nationals lineup, it could be dominant at times.
It could.
We all agree. This team has been close
to
the
lose
World
in a five-game series,
series
so this, it don't matter.
This team has been close to a World Series. I'm talking about the Nationals. And every year it's because of their bullpen that they don't get there. What is Rizzo doing down there? What is he thinking? What I mean, come on.
Well, let's be fair. He did go out and get Melanson last year, and it wasn't Melanson that cost him.
Right.
It was the pieces leading up to Melanson.
Okay.
There's only a certain amount you could do. You know, bringing Papelbon as kind of your eighth inning guy was not going to work.
Well, and then also they blew out their setup guy.
Yeah. So, and honestly, that's a trait of Dusty's. Dusty has a history of running pitchers into the ground. And
well, how far is training going to go? He works his first four games he worked.
Yeah. There's – I think Washington, for as talented as they are, look, the window's closing. I mean, when you look at – you know, you have Worth in the last year of his deal. You got Zimmerman, who's getting older. Harper, you know, in 2 years is probably out of there. The window is narrowing quickly on them. And they have this albatross hanging over them that they've never been out of the first round with as talented as they've been. So it's put up or shut up time for the Nationals now. And I'm not shorter as good as the Mets in this division. I think the Mets starting pitching matches up with them.
Right.
And I think the Mets bullpen is better. Yeah, the Nationals lineup, probably if you look at individual pieces, is probably better than the Mets. But the Mets, I think, have more upside than what the Nationals have.
So what were they saying in the Nationals clubhouse yesterday, according to the writers?
Well, yeah, talking to Mark Zuckerman of Masson, he said that people were real emotional about Jeremy Guthrie, as you can expect. The 38-year-old who gets rocked around, who didn't get called up till yesterday. They played a little roster roulette game, and it kind of blew up on them.
Well, because they wanted Ross to start that game, but they didn't feel like he was ready.
Right. So, yeah, Guthrie come up. Then he's dispatched today. And like, Joe Blanton apparently got real emotional when the conversation turned to Guthrie about knowing that, you know, at 38 years old, this is the end of, this is likely the end of the line for him. And to see a guy get, you know, tattooed the way he did, it's –
you don't want to see that happen in your last time out on a baseball field.
Yeah, here's the other part, Ricky. How does he get a job beyond this?
You don't.
I don't think he does.
You don't.
Unless you go back to AAA and try to rebuild it somehow.
Well, I mean, he had an 11-run outing in 2015, but one inning.
Yeah.
So he's done it before.
Yeah, but now he's 38 years old.
No, yeah, true.
Yeah, he's 38 years old, not having pitched in the big leagues for a year like he did last year.
The first thing I said when that happened last night, that will be the last you ever see of Jeremy Guthrie.
Well, and the other part of it, too, is you know how tough it is? He's pitched 1,700 innings. His ERA went up like 500ths of a point, which when you throw that much, it's a lot. It's sad in a way. But
yep.
All right, now,
but, I mean, you take your chances. If I tried to come back at 38 years old, there's a good chance I put up one of those innings without a doubt.
All right, Kev, let's go through, obviously, coming off last night.
Yeah.
What are you seeing so far in the early part of the season? And you saw a lot of spring training in the lineup. So you've got, obviously, you know, you had the two veterans had a big day yesterday with Kendrick and Saunders.
Right.
How are you seeing, you know, you got Galvis hitting eighth for the most part. Pete's got a set. Pretty much a steady lineup that he wants to throw out every day. What are you seeing going forward?
Well, I think the dilemma, and we were all kind of talking about this yesterday, was if Saunders doesn't hit, how do you get when do you pull Altair into the mix more? Because of how well
he's looking. Or even if he is hitting, you got to get Altair and see what he's got.
Yeah, but you can mix him into a couple spots. You can give Kendrick a day off. You can get, you know, you can put him in right and give Saunders a day off. They're going to be able to get Altair at bats, but it's a question of how steady will they be,
right.
And how steady are they going to be, and how patient are they going to be letting these veterans get their 100 at bats, 150 at bats before they kind of make a decision on what they're going to do with Altair at this point. I think the biggest concern is Franco. I think that the biggest concern is that we all saw at spring training what we thought was a change of approach. And then first five games out of the shoot here, he's doing the same
thing. A breakdown on Comcast the other day, and it was – I mean, you talk about head out, helmet almost coming off. Your
foot
front
in the bucket.
Side,
yep.
Your front side is just disappeared before the ball is even at the plate, which, I mean, as a pitcher, when I'm looking at home plate and I see him take a swing like that, I'm directing everything to the outside corner. You know what? Try to do something with this, Michael. Number one, that's where everybody should be throwing him anyways. He literally goes up there with a mindset that somebody's going to make a mistake inside and I'm hitting it out of the ballpark.
Does he need to start hitting to then relax and go back to what he was doing in spring training?
John, the easiest thing to do for a hitter is to start going back up the middle and driving the ball back at the pitcher.
At-bat in Cincinnati like that. They're right back up the box.
Maybe the first of the year.
No, it was Thursday.
Was it the second game?
First at-bat, second game?
All right.
I mean, but he has that capability. The problem is, what alarms me is, normally you see guys when they come out of spring training and they've worked on a swing, they stay with that swing for a while, and then it's May and June that they get out of it. He's gotten out of it before
Easter. Yeah, I think he's just pressing. So obviously, he's pressing very much now.
For what reason?
I don't know.
But I mean, I think there's a clear reason.
Even his hit,
there's a clear reason, Rick.
His sack fly yesterday in the first inning, that ball should have been hit out of the ballpark
because
it was down the middle, and he was late on it because he's pulling out on the baseball and pops it up towards right.
Ricky, he has to know this is a huge year for him because of the Machado rumors that are out there with the Phillies and connecting them. Because he saw Herrera get the first multi-year extension out of this group. I think if you're him, you're wondering why is – he was the franchise guy. He was the guy who was supposed to be the bedrock here. Well, I don't think that's a given that he's going to be here.
Then the interesting thing is, too, when you look at the lineup, you know, especially down – if you saw spring training, all the young guys doing well – all those guys have someone behind them that's pushing them. So you got first base. Obviously, Tommy Joseph's got to be looking at Rhys Hoskins, right? Or maybe even Brock Stassi at first. You got second base. You got two guys, Kingery, and you got Valentin, two of our top prospects that are. So Cesar's got to have that in the back of his head. Obviously, Freddie's got J.P. Crawford.
You got
outfielders with Cousins and.
You got to wonder if somehow, some way, the Phillies are going to try to throw that bait right at Mike Trout at some point.
But why, yeah. If you're the Angels, though.
And I'm talking Franco.
Because the Angels stink.
I know.
Cesar,
but
and then a couple
But the Angels
prospects.
Have no minor league system. That's why if the Phillies have a deep minor league system.
Which they do right
which
now.
Which they do. Yeah, they could go make a – they could make a play. Now, the problem is that the other team that can make a play is the Yankees. And the Yankees
Yeah, but
could
do you try to do it sooner than later? Klentak does have ties to the Angels.
Well, I'm sure.
Well, the same
I'm
could be said about Machado with the Orioles, too.
Look, I'm sure they're floating stuff out there, but, you know, when Trout's a free agent after 2020? 2020, right?
Yeah, but his contract really escalates next year.
There's certain people on this team right now that are prospects that I'm not exactly high on that other people are.
Crawford?
I think of J.P. Crawford.
Yeah.
I think you could throw him out there. I mean, you could throw.
You need him to have a good. Nick Williams, by the way, last night apparently already
went off.
No, apparently he had his first
blowout again.
He tried to catch a ball in right, one-handed, and dropped it.
Let me put it this way: was it in Allentown?
Yeah,
I've been there early in the season.
Yeah,
and there is an invisible ball that goes up. You don't see it anymore.
Wind. Yeah.
Well, no, not only that, you can't see the baseball when it's twilight there.
Right.
Forget it.
Can you stick around for?
Stick around for one more.
Coming up on the show, we'll talk more with Kevin Cooney. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB.
We now return to McFadden's at the Ballpark for the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Ricky Batalico and John Brazier.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's. I'm John Brazier, joined by my co-host, Ricky Batalico. And, Ricky, we've got a busy show right now because look at Kevin Cooney sticking out his chest right there.
Wrong one.
Yes, Kevin Cooney, but also Jay Wright, coach of the 2016 national champion Villanova Wildcats. All right. Jay,
thank
how you doing?
Guys. Thank you. Great, John. Great to be here.
Oh, I love the jersey, too. You're rocking there.
It's a great day off and nowhere I'd rather be. This is from one of Jimmy's Jimmy Rollins charity bowling events.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite shirts. I got my Mike Schmidt throwback I usually wear, but this is one of my favorites.
Now, you can see on Facebook, if people are following us on Facebook, but also if you're not, it has the old Oakland A's colors.
Oakland A's.
Yeah, it's got the gold and the green.
I don't know why he did this, but we all wore these in one of his charity bowling events.
Well,
I don't know why he went green.
Maybe?
Well, he's from Oakland. So maybe he threw a little Oakland wrinkle into that.
Yeah, maybe that
is
was.
Is that a Mitchell & Ness? It looks kind of like a little...
No, it's not. No, it's not.
All right, Majestic. Now, Jay, you grew up in Bucks County.
Yeah, man.
Right? So you're obviously a Philly. You went to Philly's games, I'm sure.
Whole life.
Back at the vet. Are you too young for
Connie Mack?
You were Connie Mack.
One of my favorite stories is my dad took me down, and somehow we got back behind home plate early. We would go down real early, you know. And Cookie Rojas was sitting on a upside-down bucket smoking a cigarette behind home plate before the game. And I was like, and that was the first player I ever met. And we were walking out, and he was sitting on an upside-down bucket. They were hitting batting practice. He just smoking a cigarette.
That's great.
Nicest guy in the world, man. They had Bobby Wine back then and Darren Johnson, Johnny Callison.
Was he a little Dick Allen?
They were the days. Dick Allen was in left field back then. And Connie Mack was a great spot. You'd pull up. Pay something. My dad, I remember, I learned a lot about life.
So they didn't steal your car?
My dad would give a guy like a five back then.
That's
and
awesome.
Keep an eye on the car. So you learned a lot about life, not just baseball, going to those games.
And then obviously the vet with the whole Schmidt years and Lisinski.
Yeah,
and
awesome. I was in college when they won the World Series, sitting in the bottom of my dorm. I was at Bucknell. Most everybody from Bucknell was like Jersey, New York, D.C. area. And it was my sophomore year. I was sitting in the bottom of the dorm watching the championship on TV all by myself, tears in my eyes, calling home. It was nobody, you know, all the New York fans, everybody was out of there.
They didn't want to hear from you.
They didn't want to see it.
See, I was the opposite. I went to UVA. So in 1983, my first year, we're in the World Series against the Orioles. All my friends are from Baltimore that went to UVA. And, you know, here I think we won the first game, right? And then we lost the next four.
Yes.
So here I'm sticking out my chest. And backfired on me big time.
That 83 season, I worked for the Philadelphia Stars. If you remember the Philadelphia Stars, you
know, USFL. Football.
Yeah, it was my first job out of college. And our offices were in the vet. So I got to go to all the World Series games because our offices were there.
Were they downstairs?
Yeah. We could just walk in. Walk in the back door. And then we would get seats out by center field, right by the camera, because they couldn't sell a couple of those seats.
Right.
And my wife, Patty, I met her at that job. And they were our dates back then. We'd go to the Phillies game. So we saw those World Series games. That was a crusher that
year. That's awesome, though.
That year was a crusher.
So wait, how did you meet her? Did she work for the Stars
The Philadelphia Stars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she went to Villanova. And
how long did the Stars last?
2 years here went to Baltimore for a year. Won the title two years. Were in the championship game all 3 years of the USFL.
I think I went to that game. Was at Franklin Field, right?
Yeah.
The championship game?
No. They played it. It was like the home games
they played at the vet. There was one crazy game they had to play at Franklin Field because the vet was being used.
For the Phillies. It was a playoff game.
Is that what it was? USFL.
Yeah, against Steve Spurrier.
The championship game
Bay.
That I was involved with that we won was in Tampa Bay. And as a matter of fact, I worked for the Stars. Miles Tannenbaum was the owner, and Carl Peterson was the president and general manager. And, you know, I was just a staff member. Patty was a cheerleader for the Stars, which she didn't let me say anymore. But so she was on the field. I really didn't have any responsibilities at the championship game. And Donald Trump owned the Generals at the time. And Carl Peterson said, now he must have been high maintenance back then, because Carl Peterson said, look, do me a favor. Will you just go in this guy's box for me and run between the media room and just run stats back and forth to him? Because back then you didn't have it on computer, so you have to run to the media room and get the stats and then run them back to him. So I did that for the entire Stars championship game with Donald and Ivanka Trump back then.
That is really funny.
And sat in his box and watched the game.
Was he a nice guy?
He was a really cool guy.
Yeah.
He was really cool. And he was into football, man. He loved it.
Well, and that Stars team was packed with players. You had Sam Mills. You had
Kelvin Bryant,
Carolina guy, right?
Yep.
Chuck Vecina, right, the quarterback. You had
Irv Eatman, who played in the NFL.
William Fuller.
Tommy Conwell's brother.
Yes.
Joe Conwell, right?
Yep.
Huh.
And they were some great years.
Sean Landetta.
All right, so
you got to make the switch over to basketball here.
Well, hold on. Yeah, let's make the switch over to
How
basketball.
How about our Phils? I was listening to you. I get my info from you guys.
We could talk about the Phils. So,
and I mean, we had our Coaches versus Cancer event last night in Philly, where all the Philadelphia coaches, you know, we raised money. It's a black tie affair. And Dave Montgomery was our honoree last year, so he's at the game. He's at the event, and I said. I'm going to the game tomorrow, man. I can't wait. How are we doing? He goes, we had 12 runs in the first inning. He's all fired up. And then we had to go on with the rest of the event. I saw later we got put up 17. That was awesome, man.
I mean, it really was unbelievable. Well, speaking of a lot of points, and I got to get this out of the way. because Ben Davis obviously is our announcer.
Yeah.
Ricky,
you know where he went to school, high school?
You know where he went to high school, right?
Malvern?
Yes. Yeah, so and what happened against Malvern when Council Rock played him in basketball?
No, Ben Davis put up numbers?
No, you
no,
did.
When you did.
Oh. It says you threw out 69 points.
No.
Is that right?
No, I didn't have
Is Wikipedia 69. Wrong? Because it says...
Oh, yeah, no. Wikipedia is it the most reliable thing to go on.
It says, during his senior season, he impressed scouts with a 69-point performance against rival Malvern Prep.
No way.
59?
No. We're
taking Wikipedia and just ripping this right out.
Nice job,
Rich. The most I ever had a game was like 28 or 30. I never had 69 points.
I was hoping...
Did he play basketball for them?
He didn't. I don't think he did.
I would hope he did.
Well, yeah, he has a size, obviously.
I think it was all baseball at that point.
My kids go to Episcopal Academy and play baseball, so Malvern was the monster team in the league. And my son played baseball at Brown. My other son played baseball for Episcopal. But Malvern, that's why we always knew about Ben Davis.
Right.
Malvern is a beast in that league. They've got kids going all over the place to college and some guys in the big. So that's a good – That's how we know our Ben Davis through our baseball Maverick.
Well, let's do talk about it. And we've got to start with last year, because obviously last year was a magical run. Walk us through, like, when before the season started, obviously you knew he had a great team, but could you see that in the crystal ball?
No,
and obviously you're always.
No, the year before, when we were a number one seed and we lost to NC State in the second round, and we were a little bit. We're a little bit crushed because of that. We didn't think we had as good a team coming back. We lost Darren Hilliard, who was playing for the Pistons, Javon Pinkston, who had a chance with the Brooklyn Nets until he hurt his knee. So we thought we're losing two NBA players. We had a good. We knew we were good, but we weren't. I don't think we were thinking national championship. But one of the things we have learned being in this business for a long time is a lot of times the team that you don't think can do it just catches fire, you know, or has some special chemistry. Once we got into the season, and early in that year, we got blown out by Oklahoma. We played one of those games in Hawaii, you know, and on the Air Force, on the Naval Base.
Right. You guys were on the beach.
Yeah, and everything was all nicey-nice. We did – Fox did their football show from there, Howie Long. Everything was nice until the game started. We got kicked. So I thought, man, we got a lot of work to do. So by two-thirds way through the year, then I thought – We got something here. We might be able to make a run.
Did you think this past year's team was better than the one that won the championship?
You know, I thought when we started the year we could be, but we actually lost two starters to start the season. So if we would have had we had a kid, Omari Spellman, coming in, who I think is going to be an NBA player, who was going to be our big guy. And so he was declared ineligible to play. And then Phil Booth, who scored 20 points in the national championship game, was going to be our stud. He hurt his knee. He was out for the season. So going in, we thought we might even be better. But then when we lost those two, we thought, man, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like I said, you never know.
But you guys looked tough going into the – I mean
– We did, man.
Going into the tournament. And the thing about the tournament that bothers me – I mean, I told you I'm from Connecticut. I've been a UConn fan. I mean, the year they won it with Kemba Walker, they never should have even been there.
Yeah.
Right.
They barely got it. They had to win
the whole Big East tournament.
The whole Big East tournament. Yep, right. And they beat us that year.
Yeah.
We were a two seed.
Well, no, it was the American. They had moved –
No.
It was the first year of the American.
Kemba was – that was the last year of the Big East for them.
Because you played them in the second round that year. That was the year you lost up in Buffalo.
Right.
Which you never want to go back to, is it?
No,
right?
No. You know what? That's interesting. We might not have been able to.
I thought that was a Big East where they beat Villanova.
Yeah, but they won it that year.
They won the American that year. It was the first
No,
year
that
the
was
American.
That was the Big East with Kemba Walker.
You know what? Kevin, I would trust Kevin. I would trust him.
I'm
because
sure
normally in the NCAA tournament, we got to Google that.
Right. But it was Madison Square Garden. I could picture Kemba Walker at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, they played the East Regional at Madison Square Garden.
No, I'm.
Oh, it was Shabazz Napier. It was Shabazz Napier's year that they won it that year. You're talking about a different year. You're right.
I'm talking about
Kemba.
The year
you're talking about, they won it.
Right.
You're right. And it was the Big East.
Right.
The year we're talking about was Shabazz Napier.
Okay.
And they beat us, and they won it. And you're right. They won the American Conference that year.
Jay, when you look at, you know, you talked about losing Spellman and Booth the way you did this year. Do you think by the time you got to the Wisconsin game, it looked like your guys were gassed a little bit? Maybe the rotation because of the injuries that you had. And you know, Chris was obviously slumping at the end of the year. Josh didn't exactly look on his game. against Wisconsin. Do you think that kind of played a role in what happened?
Yeah, I can say that to you guys now.
Yeah,
you know, during the season.
Thanks for not saying that Saturday night. It wouldn't be a great column.
But there's no reason to talk about it during the season. You know, right. we had seven guys. That was it. So to complain about it or even use it as an excuse in any way during the season does us no good at all. It, even if you even put the thought in the back of the guy's head that we might be a little tired, it hurts you. So we never addressed it all year. Mm-hmm. We never talked about it. But I did talk to the team about it after the season. I said, look, you guys gave us everything you had. You know, we were a number one. We ended the regular season number one in the country. We lost two starters. We gave everything we had. I knew in the game against Mount St. Mary's when we started that game and we looked tired. Mm-hmm. Like we won the Big East tournament. We came home on Sunday. We had the selection show on Sunday night. We had to leave. The NCAA made us leave early on Monday.
And then watch the snowfall
for
48 hours.
And then we get up to Buffalo. So our guys hadn't been home for 2 weeks. Right. I could see we were shot. But what are you going to do?
But in the tournament in general.
There's no reason to complain about it.
But right in the tournament in general, a team that's going to make the run is going to have a lucky game. They're going to have a game they probably should have lost that they somehow squeaked through. They might then have a blowout.
That's what everybody was thinking about you guys.
And it's all about.
They didn't play their best. Yeah.
It's all about matchups, too.
But I even thought we could have – We make a play at the end of the Wisconsin game, we win the game. And I really thought if we can get past this game, I was going to give those guys 3 days off. That was a Saturday. I was going to give them off Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And then we would have played Friday at Madison Square Garden.
You would have had a Wednesday practice at the Garden or at home and then go to the Garden on Thursday.
Because we just need to get past this game. I mean, these, you know, they're college guys, man. They hadn't been home in 2 weeks, literally, they've been locked up. And we're up in Buffalo, and it's snowing, and you can't go out of the hotel.
Yeah.
And, again, no excuse. Everybody's dealing with all kinds of different stuff, too. And there was no reason to talk about it at the time. And all the media, you guys kept asking us that all year, and I kept saying, no, we're fine. We're fine.
Don't blame me.
We were supposed to have a fluff interview with Kev. You know, right?
But there's no reason. It doesn't do you any good to talk about it. Just this is what we got to deal with, so let's deal with it.
But, you know what? You had a hell of a year.
Yeah.
You know, you got a national championship under your belt in the last 2 years.
I want to go back to that. So just two quick questions. So when Chris Jenkins hit that shot, like what was the first – like what was going through your head? Were you more relieved? Were you just like
– No. As you got – like Ricky knows, when you're in the game, it's so much easier. Like everyone says, oh, even our players, they call me OG, gangster, man. You didn't even respond. Well, when you're in the game, you're so dialed in. You're not nervous. You're not worried about anything. You're just dialed in. In 09, when Scotty Reynolds hit the shot for us to go to the Final Four, that shot was at the buzzer. The referees went back. They always find a way to put on 0.7 seconds.
Right.
Everybody ran out on the floor. Everybody celebrate. We had to get everybody off the floor, get these guys' heads back into the game. Like these guys, and they got off a shot that almost went in. So I thought these refs are going to go back and they're going to put 0.5 seconds on the clock. Well, the confetti came down. Everybody's out on the court. And they went back and looked at it. I never even got to hear it from the ref. Everybody just jumped on me, said it's over. So that's why I was so calm. I was thinking, we're going to have to get these guys off the court. They're going to have to get confetti off the court.
Right.
We're going to have to defend a full court shot. And one of the things that's interesting about that is, I don't know if you noticed this, but at that game, right, at the second that Chris Jenkins' shot went through, the fireworks went off, the confetti came down, which really looks cool on TV.
Right.
And the videos of that look really cool, the timing. So the Saturday of the semifinals, CBS asked me to do the pregame show. So when I went to do the pregame show, the guys said to me on CBS, they said, you know, we almost had a major problem last year with that confetti and everything. So the guy that's in charge of the confetti at the arena is not a basketball guy, a sports guy. He's some technician that just – he just saw the shot go in, and he hit the confetti. He didn't know that they could go back and check the clock. So if you looked at this year's game, so he said, we changed it. We got a guy on there that actually knows basketball.
That's probably pretty important.
In this year's game, Carolina wins. They're shaking hands, everything. Gonzaga left. Like 5 minutes later, confetti came down.
Oh,
and
my God.
They're never going to make that mistake again. They talked about that. But that's what I was thinking about.
I just think it was cool to see a South Carolina you know, obviously at your expense a little bit, but it was cool to see someone like the team that nobody gave any shot to that made it that far. And that's the beauty of the NCAA basketball that it
I
just
agree.
All right, Ricky Pitalka out of here.
It was a different type of tournament because you had three teams that had not been to the Final Four. You know, Oregon since the first Final Four.
Right.
And then you had Gonzaga with Mark Few and everything, and then South Carolina.
Right. It was
cool. But in the way, the best team ended up winning.
I agree. I agree. And I think Gonzaga was right there. They could have won it. They were just as good as Carolina, just like Carolina could have beat us the year before. And it came down to the two best teams.
Was not a pretty game.
Was that over-officiated? No. Like, as a casual fan, it just seemed that it just – there's
so
too much –
You guys got me relaxed right now in a baseball mode.
Sorry. Yeah, let's go back to baseball.
No. I'm saying I'm being really honest. Those two teams were two of the best defensive teams, and they played really physical, and they officiated the game like they're supposed to. But the NCAA talks all season about this freedom of movement,
right?
And we're not, you know, we don't want physicality. But then you get to the NCAA tournament, and they don't call it,
right? Mm-hmm.
So because they don't want the game stopped.
Right.
That championship game was officiated like the games were all year, and it should be, because they were the two best defensive teams. And both of those teams, along the way, got by with some physicality.
Right.
Even Gonzaga, more so than people know, they got by with some physicality because guys didn't want to call it that way. So it did make the game ugly, the refs, but they officiated that game like it's
supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
Well, we'll end on a note. The Philadelphia Phillies, obviously you're a big Phillies fan, so what are you thinking this year? You got a little sampling. You've seen
I'm going to say I'm a fan, so I don't look at it like you guys do. I listen to you guys and get my info, and my sons always watch the game, so I'm always asking them questions. So this is totally fan. But I think we got a lot of young guys that even playing, but also in the system that we – they got to play. You got to go through a process to earn. You got to earn the right to win. They got to play, and then we got to see which ones will really step up to be great professionals. Like, which ones are going to have the talent? We know a lot of these young guys have talent. Who's going to bring it every day? Who's going to have that Chase Utley, you know, Pete Rose, Mike Schmidt, like laser focus, bring it to the ballpark every day, whether we're up five, down five, like. A play last night where Herrera, I think we had 7 or 8 runs. I was reading about this, and it just hit me. 7 or 8 run lead. He hits a ground ball to short, and he still beats it out.
He did, yeah.
Right? And we got 4 more runs after that.
Yep.
Like, that kind of mentality, you could have a 7-8 run lead. You hit a ground ball to short. You're mad.
Right.
You jog it out. That type of mentality every day, every play, can separate him, get guys like that. And I think a couple years away of being really good.
Well, and you're right, and you see where the holes are going to be. We're going to know who's going to rise to the top, and then we have, A, players in the system, but also we're going to have the wherewithal to supplement that with, whether it's we were talking earlier, Manny Machado, could be a Bryce Harper, it could be way down the road, knock on wood, Mike Trout.
That one got me really excited. This is kind of the first time I heard it.
Yeah, but it's 2020, but it's, you know, but again, you can always do a trade.
That's exciting, man.
But that would, you know, if he came here, it would it would make my job a lot easier. maybe harder, I guess.
I don't even think rockstar would be the word if he was in this town.
Have you met him? Supposedly he is. I met him one time.
I have not.
But supposedly he is like the nicest. Doesn't have an ego at all.
I saw him at an Eagles game.
There's a documentary coming out on him, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they showed it on MLB Network on Friday night.
Did they show it? It came out already?
Came out, yeah. They showed it. They showed it. Well, maybe it was – yeah, it was on MLB Network, and they did a screening in Millville. And
I want to see that.
I mean, that would be really unbelievable.
It's funny watching him down here at an Eagles game and just, like, Joe Jersey. I mean, just basically send
him
to Jersey.
Him or what?
Oh, my God. Well, I'm going to let you go eat.
Thanks.
And the game. Thank you very much for coming up. All right, thanks, Jay. Great Jay Wright.
See you next year.
All right, coming on the show, we'll wrap it up with Kevin Cooney. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB.
We now return to McFadden's at the Ballpark for the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Ricky Pitalka and John Brazier.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. We are live from McFadden's. I'm John Brazier, joined by Kevin Cooney, Ricky
Pitalka.
Well, Ricky Pitalka. Well, you're probably happy about that, right?
Yeah, it depends on the day. It depends on the payday.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's good to be Ricky Pitalka.
It can be.
Right? All right, let's talk about today's game. I'm going to go through a little baseball, too. Today's lineup. You've got pretty much the standard lineup other than Andrew Knapp. You've got Hernandez leading off. You got Kendrick hitting second. Herrera third. Franco fourth. Saunders fifth. Got Joseph, Knapp, Galvis, and Hellickson going up against Strasburg. So what do you see today?
Yeah, I was
see back to reality.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, not necessarily a loss necessarily, you know, a given of a loss, but I mean, you're not going to score 17 runs. I mean, I was surprised that Joseph, I guess Pete put him back in the lineup
just because to get him going.
I thought you may see Stassi today against Strasburg, but look, the key is the work counts against Strasburg and get him out before the fifth inning and get into the Nationals bullpen.
All right, let's go through a little baseball since we had a. I love talking to Jay Wright, one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet.
Should I point out that my Orioles are 4-0 and or 5-0 and the only undefeated team left in the
majors? I did not know that. Yes. I haven't even looked at the standings
yes.
yet.
Yes. Well, let's only go undefeated team left.
Let's go through baseball. There's a guy, Marlins starter Wee Yin Chen,
former Oriole.
He got his first major league hit. He was previously 0-51.
By pitching in American League, I mean.
Right, but he's still 0-51. That's a long streak right there. That's even worse than Larry Anderson. All right. We had a Cardinals reliever. He denied applying a foreign substance to a ball that stuck to Molina's chest protector.
I saw that, and it's funny that baseball has kind of said that nothing happened. Unless there's a magnet there, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's tough to excuse.
Right. How about the flu bug? The flu bug has hit the Red Sox, even hit their announcer. Dave O'Brien couldn't even call the game. They had to get somebody else. Ramirez, Mookie Betts, Mitch Moreland.
Where do you go for a backup announcer?
I guess you go to one of your pregame show hosts or so. One of the relievers was put on the DL because of the flu. We're not talking like a one-day, two-day.
We should point out the DL is different.
10 days.
It's a 10-day DL.
Right.
So.
Kyle Schwarber. In spring training, hit a ball over the fence in spring training and hit the backside of a Clydesdale. And then one of his teammates put an upside-down horseshoe from that horse on there. And we talked about, just we'll wrap up, the openers, unfortunately, Phils are 3-11 in the openers of CBP, but I think that's going to tie. The tide's going to turn starting in a couple of years. All right. Kev, that wraps up today's Baseball Insider Show presented by Set the Live McFadden's on 1490 WBCB. I'd like to thank my co-host today, Ricky Batalico, the great Kevin Cooney, of course, Jay Wright, our engineer today, Chris Ermer, and Bob Gianquinto. Back in the studio, I'm assuming it's Jack Urban, as well as John Bernardo for hosting us at McFadden's. We'll be back next Sunday following the Phillies game at Washington, the Nationals. We're going to be at Puss in Boots in Fairless Hills, PA. Stay tuned for Phillies on Deck with Jim Jackson, as the legendary Harry the K says.
We are out of here.
You've been listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, an exclusive presentation of 1490 AM WBCB, and heard around the world at WBCB1490.com.